Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Welcome, Christy. We are so excited to have you join us.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be able to join you.
Well, I hear that you went through an incredible treatment, and I'd love to kind of spend the majority of the time on that because there's so many amazing details that I know our listeners would love to learn about. But tell me a little bit about, you know, kind of your story, how, you know, symptom-wise and diagnosis, and from what I understand, you're one of the few that actually got diagnosed quickly.
Yes, thank you. I was bitten the first time I remember being bitten. I was about 8 years old, and I was at a camp in Mississippi, and I remember seeing ticks crawling on the walls in the bathroom. I remember them picking a tick off of my leg. And then a few days after I returned home, I found a tick in a very personal place and had to ask my mother to remove it. So I remember that tick quite well.
Yes.
I had very swollen, painful knees. I ran track as a kid and I threw up quite often, almost every morning. My mother used to say I was the throwing upinest kid she had ever seen. And I had a heart murmur, I had heart palpitations. My heart would race when I would breathe in, and then it would slow down when I would breathe out. The doctor always said, oh, it's, you know, just a kid murmur. It'll go away with age, but it never did. And so I always had Raynaud's. You know, my hands would get just white tips on the ends of them. Always throughout my whole life, lower back pain, knee pain, migrating joint pain from one place to another. But it wasn't until about 6 years ago, I guess, I got a job in a school teaching 800 kids a week. My stress level was amazingly high. I couldn't sleep at night. I felt like my hip was broken. And I had terrible insomnia, sound sensitivity, brain fog was awful. I had depersonalization where I just felt like I wasn't even alive. Like I was just watching myself live on a television screen. And I had thoughts of just like, it wouldn't matter if I was dead or alive because I didn't feel like I was alive anyway. I was just like a zombie. And I had neuropathy that started in my hands. It would start with a tingling while I was holding my cell phone in my fingertips, and it would work its way down my hands. I had what I called sausage hands. When I would walk, it would feel like my fingers were fat and swollen like sausages. Frequent night urination. I would get really jumpy, really easy. If somebody would do something, it would startle me and I would just jump. I used to sing a lot. But then I had noticed that I couldn't hit the notes anymore. And I thought, oh, it must be age. Everything I thought was age. And then I had this really strange thing. The first thing that kind of set it all in motion in my head was I got this strange little water droplet feeling in the corners of my eye. And I thought that maybe I was getting torn retinas. And I went to a doctor and he photographed my retinas. They couldn't find anything wrong with it. And then all the other symptoms just started getting worse and worse. And I Googled, and every time I would Google my symptoms, Lyme disease would come up. And so I eventually, in the middle of the pandemic, decided when I woke up one morning and my hands, the neuropathy had frozen my hands from my elbow down to my hands. I couldn't feel anything, numb and tingly. And I said, it just scared me. And I asked the doctor to test me. And she said, you know, it's not common. I really doubt you're going to have Lyme disease. And she tested me for $13,000 worth of tests for MS and lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and you name it. And she called me back 4 days later, having to eat her words, and said, oh, you have Lyme disease. So I was one of the, I guess, lucky ones, you would say, that I did test CDC positive for Lyme disease.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because a lot of people don't. Did you go mm-hmm. through Igenix for that, or do you know?
I did not. I did Western blot and ELISA.
Okay.
Great. Yeah, that you are one of the few.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah.
So what happened then? I mean, so you diagnosed that, and what was your next step at that point? You know, because a lot of doctors aren't really aware what to do.
Yes, she was an integrative doctor, so she was a little more open to the idea of Lyme disease, I guess. She she requested that I do 30 days of doxycycline before I start any other treatments. And I had been on the internet just studying up and trying to figure out, and I had found disulfiram, and I asked her if I could try it. And she had heard about it from another of her patients, but that patient didn't try it, but at least she knew of it. And so she said, okay, if you do this 30 days of doxycycline, I'll let you do disulfiram.
Okay.
And so I did it, and I herxed, but then it passed in 2 weeks. It was like the herx was gone, and then it didn't do anything. Then it was like everything was the same. So when I went back to her, she pulled her pad out and she said, okay, what do you want me to write the prescription for?
Let me ask Google.
Yeah. And
I was like,
and how much am I paying you for to give me advice?
At least it was covered by insurance. Was a good thing. And I was like, okay, hold on. I know this, I've heard this is a really rough treatment. So let me talk to the hive mind over at the disulfiram groups and see, you know, what I should be doing. And so what I came up with was 30 milligrams a day in acid resistant capsules. I got them compounded so that they would be the same amount every day. Some people cut their pills and they put them in acid resistant tablets, but I wanted mine to be just right.
Yeah,
I didn't want to play around with the dosages. And so I did 30 milligrams a day, and then I increased by an additional 30 milligrams every 2 weeks. So I did 30 milligrams for 2 weeks, and then 60 for the next 2 weeks, and then 90 for the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
And I did that until I got to 500 milligrams, and then I stayed at 500 milligrams for 8 months. And for most people, they think, you know, that's utter insanity, that you don't need that much. But from what I've seen and the people who I have followed, that's the ones who get remission are the ones who get to 500 milligrams for 6 to 8 months. I've seen too many people go at the lower dosages only for it to return pretty quickly. And I don't want that.
No, not at all.
No, I was all in.
So when you first started it, when did you notice things getting better or things getting worse? Did you notice that within the first few weeks or?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange drug. So it also hits your serotonin levels. So increases your serotonin. So at first I noticed elation. I felt happy. I felt, like really great. I thought, oh, this is going to be great being on this medicine. But then once I hit, between 60 and 90 milligrams is when I started to herx. And after 90, about 3 to 5 days after each increase, to me, I would get a tightness across my shoulders. And then the next morning, I would feel like I had been in a car accident the day before. It's just like aches everywhere. And then by the following day, it felt like I had been in an accident with a Mack truck. I mean, it was painful. The brain fog was really bad. At first, it was the body aches and everything that were bad. And when I say bad, I am the only patient that has been able to stay on this medicine that my doctor has. Everybody else has cut out. They're like, can't do it. It's horrible. It's if you
brutal.
Think the worst hurts you've ever had on another medicine, you know, yeah, amplify that.
And that, yeah, the body pain, headache, fatigue, confusion, all, mm-hmm. I mean, all of those things, digestive.
I didn't really have too many digestive problems unless I took zinc close to the disulfiram. They don't play very nicely together and you get diarrhea. And so I would take my zinc in the mornings and my disulfiram at night on an empty stomach to avoid any of those interactions.
So the people mm-hmm. that were not able, I mean, you're saying that the Herx reaction was horrific and not very many people were able to get to where you went, you know, the 500 milligrams, I assume. So did they not then get the benefit of the medication because mm-hmm. they were not able to get to that point?
Correct. They could not, yeah, reach that point. So the way that I had, the things I had read about it before was that you continue increasing until you stop herxing. So I had heard that you increase and then you herx, which means you just killed some off. So you increase again. And if you herx again, then you just need to increase some more and you keep going until you no longer herx when you increase.
Okay.
So for me, I herxed until I got to 240 milligrams. Between 120 to 240 was the worst brain herx. I couldn't even spell my name some days. Wow. It was, I couldn't speak. I couldn't speak a sentence. I stuttered. I developed a stutter for months. It was crazy. But just trying to put a sentence together, I could think of a thing in my head, and I've never had a stroke, but I would assume this is how a stroke would feel, because I would think of a, like a jelly bean. I could see a jelly bean in my hand. I could taste it in my mouth, but I couldn't get the word out of my mouth. But it was like that with many words. And I would just start a sentence and then it would just turn into gibberish. And then I would just, and then I would start crying and my friends would be, it's okay. You don't have to talk right now, you know? So, yeah.
And how did, so when you had this event, you know, this horrible herxing, you know, mm-hmm. how long did it last for? I mean, was it just continual throughout or it lasted for a couple of days and then you had reprieve and then you increased the dosage and then it was worse again?
Yes, it was a small reprieves. And so I learned to ride it like a roller coaster. And that's how I knew it was a herx and not a reaction to the medication, because it would ebb and flow like that. You would get your highs and lows. So the herx would start for me 3 to 5 days after each increase. And then the worst part of it would maybe be 5 to 7 days. And then it would start to fall off again. So probably a day, maybe 2 days before it was time for my next increase is when I would feel okay again. And then it would start all over again. Then I would have to take the increase and then 3 to 5 days later, I'd be back in the herx again. It was more herxing than not herxing.
Not herxing.
So
yeah.
So with that, so how did you time then the increases? Was it based upon how you were feeling or did you have a certain timing, like every week I'm increasing?
Every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks.
You should not increase more than every 2 weeks because it's a cumulative drug. And so it builds over time. And if you try to increase it more than once every 2 weeks, it builds too quickly. But by the time you realize that you have taken too much, there's no turning back. You just have to hold on tight and go and just wait for it to die down. So a lot of people, what has happened, I've seen in the groups, people think they're stronger than they are, or they think they can handle it better than anybody else. And they'll go in and they'll take 125 right off the bat, or they'll take 250 milligrams right off the bat. And those people often end up in the hospital, either in a mental institution or in an actual hospital.
Wow.
So I do not ever suggest going faster than that.
Yeah.
So you said that you would max out once you quit herxing. So mm-hmm. I believe you said you quit herxing around 240 or 250.
So 240 is when my body hurt stopped. So I stopped having pains, but I still noticed that I was having the brain hurts. Every time I would increase, I would get foggy. I'd feel like if I was driving, I wouldn't stop fast enough, or I would pass up stop signs. It got dangerous to drive.
Okay. And so that's why you increased to 500.
Yes. The brain hurts continued until I got to 400. And then after 400, I didn't notice them anymore. But so I just was like, okay, I'm close to 500. I'm going to go to 500. Okay. And so that's what I did.
So are there people that get to a point where they're not hurting anymore that is not 500 and stop and do well, or should they still just continue to 500 no matter what?
Well, all I can do is speak for myself, is that I decided to go to the 500, and I'm only 120 pounds. And a lot of people do it by weight, because there was a doctor who took it himself. And he said that he got toxic brain toxicity from it. But I believe if he experienced what I experienced, it was just really bad hurts for me. And that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that people are not going high enough. But I'm not a doctor, and I don't know. I can only speak from my own experience.
Right, and what you've studied up on it. But
I've seen in other people, yeah.
It sounds like definitely a progression of a drug that you have to go up and stay on it for a certain amount of time once your Herxes stop. And that was about 8 months for you.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I had read other people doing 6 months, and another one did 8 months, and I just didn't want to have to do it again.
Right. You'd already come that
so
far.
Many people, right. Yeah. So many people have done this, and then they're like, oh, I have to do it again. No, I'm not doing that again. I mean, I would do it again if I had to. But I didn't want to.
Right. Well, I don't blame you.
Yeah. Who wants to do something that sucked twice? Yeah.
Exactly.
So I've heard, I don't know a lot about it, but I have heard, I've had a few friends that were on it and they didn't last. But I heard that you can't have any form of alcohol.
When zero.
And we're talking like alcohol and ketchup and toothpaste and stuff like that. So how hard was that for you? Can you talk a little bit about the things you had to cut out, or did you learn the hard way on something that had alcohol and you didn't know?
It reminds you, if you forget or you think you can do it, you cannot. So at first I was able to have mayonnaise and ketchup and a few things when I was like at 100 and maybe at 125 or so, I could still have those things. But then when I got into the higher dosages, I had 3 tablespoons of ketchup one night with some French fries when I was at 500 milligrams, thinking it would be fine. And I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning with severe diarrhea, vomiting, sweats, like the worst hangover you've ever had multiple times over. And there is something you can take though. It's called dihydromercetin. And it is a supplement. You can get it off Amazon. And it's like it's like a hangover reverse medication. And so take a couple of those, and then in like 20 to 30 minutes, it subsides.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there's you cannot have alcohol, vinegar, soy sauce, anything fermented like kimchi, yogurt. You can't have even overly ripe fruit. I mean, it's pretty extensive.
Yeah.
I was able to use my regular shampoo without a problem. I don't wear a bunch of makeup or hairspray or anything, so that wasn't a problem for me. I did just use baking soda for toothpaste. But yes, you will get headaches. If you eat something, just a little bit of something, you'll get like a low grade kind of a migraine headache if you slip up.
And that quickly tells you that, okay, what did I eat today? Because I need to not eat that again. Yeah. I've heard that was a really hard part, of the disulfiram is is not being able to have certain things that you didn't think had alcohol in them.
Yeah. Ice cream. Like so many ice creams are made with vanilla extract.
And, is okay. So I'm not knowledgeable. So apparently that has alcohol in it.
Absolutely. Vanilla extract. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I wouldn't make it through it. I'm pretty sure of that.
I'm done. Peace out.
Yep. Peace out. If it's not in a bottle with a cap, I think I'm good.
Yeah.
And that's what so many of, I've heard from so many people when they find out they can't have wine, they can't have their alcohol. They're like, oh no, I'm not going to try that. I'm like, come on. Like you're going to suffer for the rest of your life instead of, you know, it took me 17 months to go through it. I can do without all of that for 17 months if I'm going to have my health back.
Yeah. You right. Know? Right. They must not be sick enough or desperate enough yet, because when you get to a point where you'll do anything, then, you know, we push ourselves and do more than we ever think we can get through because we're so desperate to get better.
Yeah.
And I've had patients like that. You know, they're dying from cancer. They come in and I tell them, you got to stop eating this and that, and say, oh, I can't do that. I love ice cream.
Yeah.
And okay, I guess you
I don't choose, love myself,
no,
but
I guess you choose ice cream over life. Yeah. And then and so they did, and yeah, they lost life. But they
right.
Yeah. So it is fascinating, you know, when people are in such a dire situation that they're still not willing to take that step that will get them better, even if it's if it's hard, but they'd rather suffer for longer.
And yeah. I've noticed that a lot. You know, because I work with a lot of Lyme patients just in the mentoring, you know, Facebook groups and stuff. And I tell them all the time how important their diet is. And like the first thing out of their mouth is, do I have to do this forever? I don't know if I can do that. I can't quit dairy. I can't. And I'm like, you know, I'm not sure if you're really, really sick, because if you know, I remember for a few years, I swear I had like five things I could eat. And I couldn't eat fruit. And I'm thinking, but gosh, fruit is good for you. You know, there were so many things. I couldn't have my daily coffee for months. And I knew it wasn't going to be fun, but I wanted my life back. And so I was willing to do anything. And there's so many people that do not understand how important their diet is in their healing journey. And it's so important.
Yeah. So during this process, I mean, are there any kind of tips to make the process easier? Do you do any kind of herbals to support your detoxification or any other anti-inflammatory? I mean, is there anything else that you can use to make this process as friendly as possible?
So far, no. Unfortunately, a lot of people try taking binders. They do detoxes. What I was worried about was I didn't want to do all of the coffee enemas and all the different detoxes that people do, because I didn't want to wash the disulfiram out of my system. I didn't want to detox it out of my system along with everything else. And so the only thing I really did for detoxing is glutathione, because my doctor suggested that, you know, we need that anyway, and it is a natural detoxer. So that was basically the only thing I did for detox.
Was a glutathione.
And I just toughed it out. And right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel the glutathione added anything, or was it just your doctor said to take it, and so you took it?
Yeah. And right now, I don't know if she's still doing the study right now, but Monica Embers is over at the Tulane Primate Center. And she was doing some research on disulfiram and primates. She was trying to figure out that whole situation with the cytokines and try to make it a little less hard for Lyme sufferers to take disulfiram. And I don't know when she's going to... you know, come out with that study, but that's what she was doing.
Okay. I remember when I obviously didn't do what you did, but my protocol was pretty brutal as well. And I remember when I was having the really bad Herxes, I would do magnesium IVs. And that really helped my body pain. Did you take magnesium during your treatment?
I do. I take magnesium L-threonate because it's the one that passes the blood-brain barrier. And because of all the brain inflammation and everything, I took one in the morning and two at night before bedtime.
Okay.
So are there any other supplements or things that, that you think should be on people's radars as they go through this process with the disulfiram?
Yeah, so disulfiram is one of those things that it possibly activates viruses. They're studying it right now also with AIDS patients because there's certain medications that they give to the AIDS patients that only work when it's in its activated state. And so they'll give the person the disulfiram, activate the AIDS, and then give them the AIDS medication. And so because of this, I believe that a lot of people are getting Epstein-Barr virus activated. And I've noticed that when people hit about the 240 milligram mark, they all start complaining that they're having extreme fatigue. And my doctor believes that when that happened to me, that it was Epstein-Barr. So what I suggest taking for that is lysine, AHCC, and olive leaf, which are all natural antivirals. So I took those the whole time that I was taking disulfiram, to keep those Epstein-Barr viruses down.
Okay. So the only real tip to get through anything is if you make a boo-boo and have some alcohol, you've got those pills you can take. Mm-hmm. Sounds like your only saving grace. Okay, yeah, those pills, though, just helped the excessive. It did not make your Herx stop. It just...
Oh, no.
It just didn't... When you took the sugar, it... got really bad. So it just kind of brought it back down to the normal level when you took those, right?
Yeah, the dihydromercetin, it's just for when you react with some types of alcohol or fermented product.
Okay.
When you have that, it's like an overhang, you know, like overhang. Yeah, when you've had alcohol and when you've had too much alcohol, you feel like you just have a hangover. It helps that out.
So can you swallow those pills with a glass of wine and kind of equal it out?
I don't think so.
I'm not sure you would be a very good patient, Dr. Karlfeld.
I don't think so. I better not get Lyme. Oh, darn it. So how are you feeling now? I mean, do you feel that you're on a complete road to recovery, or do you still kind of have a little ways to go?
Yeah, I feel really great. No, ever since I hit about 400 milligrams, the rest of it was a piece of cake. Yeah. I mean, it was just getting up to that was hard. Once I was there, as long as I didn't mess up and eat something I wasn't supposed to eat, it was a piece of cake. It was great. I felt wonderful. Didn't have any aches or pains. All the Lyme symptoms were completely gone. I felt wonderful. And so people are afraid. They're like, how do you stay at 500 milligrams? Well, it's just the road. It's the road getting there that's rough. Being there was so easy for me. And I don't think it's the same for everybody, especially if you have Bartonella. That's kind of the big thing, is that it does not do the same thing for Bartonella. And so those people need something different. They need to do therapies along with it. And I was just listening to, I was on a Zoom listening to Dr. Horowitz, and he was talking about dapsone therapy, and he's having some success with double dapsone and now quadruple dapsone, where he is pulsing it at, you know, quadruple strength and double strength. And then he's also combining it with disulfiram so that people with Bartonella and Lyme, he said, are having some success with that. So hopefully that's a new thing for Bartonella, because that is much harder to get rid of, I've heard, than Lyme. And I didn't have Bartonella, which I'm very happy about that.
So is that the only co-infection that it doesn't work on? Does it work on like Babesia and Ehrlichia?
It's said to help with babesia. I'm not sure about Ehrlichia or not. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it hits Bartonella. It just doesn't kill it. And some people say it activates it and makes it worse.
Okay. Interesting.
For the Bartonella. Mm-hmm.
Well, gosh, I certainly learned a lot tonight. And it was very, very helpful because I didn't know much about it. And people ask me all the time. And, you know, there's no, like, you're not the doctor, as you say, but I think it's just fantastic to share everybody's experiences with it so that they kind of know what they might be getting themselves into.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then they can have that discussion with, you know, with their doctor to see if they are somebody that's comfortable to guide them through this process. You know, so that's huge. Well, it's been awesome to have you on the show today. I mean, this is such incredible information.
Absolutely. Yeah. You were the first one we've talked about with this. So it's been great. Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. And I'm so, so happy that you feel amazing. That's wonderful.
Thank you all for having me on. I love sharing with other people. And, you know, just if you're going to do it, strap your panties on. You know, put your seatbelt on and hold on. It's a rough ride, but, you know, being on this other side of it is amazing.
Yeah. Makes it all worth it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Christy.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.